Here's a question that we're asking as a program this morning. Why did the organization, the Civil Contingency Group, that's the organization tasked to keep us all safe, it didn't meet until 2 p.m. yesterday. So think about that. They didn't meet until 2 hours after the amber warning started. The former PSNI Assistant Chief Constable Alan McQuillan can help us get our heads around this. Does that sound strange to you, Alan?
It does, yes. I mean, there is an entire framework of the way government is supposed to respond to these cases. On one level, it seems strange. On another, I think we do have to remember, we don't have a government at the moment. The civil servants are there, but there are no ministers. And it's unfortunately, it's like having someone who's had a stroke, part of the brain has ceased to function, and therefore it doesn't work the way it should.
But yet we still need decisions to be made. There yes. still needs to be processes in place. Can you help us understand what this civil contingency group is designed for? What is it?
Well, what you have is you have a series of arrangements, and there's a huge amount on their website about this. You have a civil contingencies group that's supposed to plan, make sure all the plans are in place, all the training is done.
How can they plan if they don't meet until after it's started?
Well, the planning's done in advance. I mean, you do the planning well in advance. And in fact, some of the planning's been done so far in advance that the last time it was updated was 2004. So, you know, this is way out of date. The minute plans in advance sets out the plans so that you have the emergency plans. When something happens, you just take them off the shelf and apply them. And they should be used and exercised on a regular basis so that every organisation knows its role. But when you go to the Civil Contingency Group website and you look at the Executive Office's role, most of it hasn't been updated since 2010. And for example, the evacuation plans, if we have to evacuate members of the public on quite a large scale, haven't been updated for 13 years.
What hasn't been updated for 13 years?
There's a thing called the Guidance on Evacuation, which sets out the principles and things to be done if people have to be evacuated in Northern Ireland. Last updated 2004. Most of the contingency arrangements last updated 2010. So, you know, some of this predates the reorganisation of local government. It predates the rise and the usefulness of social media in this sort of context to get messages out to the mass public. And it's just all out of date. But it's a symptomatic of the way our government's been working.
You know, when you say it's out of date, look, we had a situation clearly yesterday, and there are some people asking about the basics, you know, that Northern Ireland seemed unable, you know, the very basics. The Department of Education seemed unable to actually communicate with school principals in an effective way. You know, what if we have a major, thank God there was no loss of life yesterday in Northern Ireland. And it's very, very sad that, and obviously tragic that three people lost their lives in the Republic of Ireland. But, you know, if we had have had a major critical incident in Northern Ireland yesterday, are we ready for it, Alan?
I think on the basis of this, no, we're not. I think from my particular perspective on this, take the schools issue. There were some figures published a couple of weeks ago of for every £10 that we spend on education in Northern Ireland, only £7 gets to the schools. The other £3 is siphoned off by layers of administration and support services and all sorts of things in the middle. And that's the worst position of any of the four parts of the United Kingdom, or indeed the Irish Republic. There's layer upon layer of bureaucracy and systems in the middle. And those things don't work in an emergency. So you need to have the arrangements in place, and they need to be exercised and trained.
We've got a statement sent through here from the Executive Office, who have been in touch with us to say we shouldn't call them an organisation, they're a body. That's the sum total of what they're... that is the sum total of their contribution today.
Well, the other issue...
I want to read a statement that the Executive Office have sent through to us here. And in this statement, they say that the Met Office first alerted responders to Ophelia on Friday the 13th of October with a yellow warning. The upgrading of the Met Office warning to an Amber Alert on Sunday the 15th of October resulted in the convening of a multi-agency teleconference meeting later that day. So they all spoke to each other on the phone to assess the situation. Collectively discuss, they said, potential impacts and identify how best to mitigate their efforts and to coordinate the response. They say the PSNI opened their strategic coordination centre on the morning of Monday the 16th of October. So the police opened the strategic centre on the day this was supposed to be happening. Mm-hmm. The Amber warning, don't forget, kicked off at midday at 12 o'clock. And here's what we know. We know that the civil contingency group was convened at the request of the head of the civil service, in other words, David Stirling, at 2 o'clock, 2 p.m., 2 hours after the Amber warning was in force.
Yeah.
Again, I ask the question, should these people, Alan, in your professional view, should these people have been meeting before the Amber warning kicked in?
Well, I think quite clearly they should. There should have been a wider coordination before that. And I think what I suspect, knowing David Stirling, what you have is David Stirling stepping in and saying, what's going on here? Get that group together. But I think quite clearly the fact it happened across a weekend, I wouldn't criticise the police, and that's not just because I used to be a police officer. The police had stepped it up. I'm sure that they had already put their staff on standby, as had the fire brigade and the ambulance.
The police were unable. The police were unable, right up until 10:30 yesterday when I finished on the radio, to be even issuing basic motoring advice to people in their cars. Unable to do it. The Department for Infrastructure saying nothing up until 10:30 yesterday as to advice to motorists. Nothing.
Well, that's wrong. I mean, very simple. And I mean, the bottom line is quite simple here. We've focused entirely the last number of years on the politics at Stormont and the politics not working. One of the problems we have, our government doesn't work. Our structure of government, our systems don't work. We divided government up at one point, not on the basis of any rational, sensible approach, but because we wanted to create a certain number of ministers to suit the political situation. Those ministers operate effectively as rubber barons in their own department. We then reformed that a few years back, and we came down to a smaller, slimmer executive. But nothing's caught up with that, and there's still no sign of better coordination across the whole of government.
Here's Michael in Belfast. Morning, Michael. First call to Dennis. Morning, Michael.
Hey, Mr. Nolan, how are you?
Go ahead.
Stephen, I can sum this thing up in a couple of words. See this crowd up here? That's the civil service, the government, or whatever you want to call them. They couldn't organise a police club.
Well, what I want to do as a programme, I want us to go back to the executive office and indeed the head of the civil service, Mr. Stirling, and let's seek clarity this morning. Why did the civil contingency group not meet until 2 hours after the Amber warning had kicked in?
What are you going back to the executive office for? There's nobody here. What are you going back to Evans for? There's nobody here. They don't care. You know what I mean? And as for the head of the civil service, I heard him on yesterday. What an excuse he was making.
Who?
This is Stirling, you call him?
Well, Mr. Stirling wasn't on this show yesterday. He was on the news yesterday.
He was on the TV yesterday.
Yeah. The executive officer...
Everybody's on your show, Nolan, you know what I mean?
The executive officer are pointing out within their statement, established command and coordination structures were in place throughout. Yesterday, the CCG provided an additional oversight and review function as Ophelia approached, providing reassurance that all necessary preparations were in place.
Stephen,
hold on.
Stephen, there's about four words in that sentence that I've never heard of before. So don't give me all that spin that they're giving you. Tell me in ordinary words. They hadn't a clue what was going on.
The key point is this. This civil contingency group is there to provide additional oversight. These are the words of the executive office. It's there to provide additional oversight and to provide reassurance that all preparations were in place, and it didn't meet until 2 hours into the amber warning. It didn't meet until midday.
Well, sure, you know what I mean.
So how on earth was that providing reassurance that all necessary preparations were in place if it didn't meet until 2 hours into this?
For the sake of me repeating myself, what did I say at the start of it? It was a farce, Stephen.
Let me bring in Jim Allister, the TV leader. Jim, what do you make of this? Sorry, Jim Allister, not with us just yet. Sam McBride with us, journalist for the newsletter. Morning to you, Sam.
Morning, Stephen.
What do you make of this?
Well, I think that this whole situation over the weekend has exposed a key weakness, really, in how Northern Ireland is being run. And not just that, but it's really shown the acute political vulnerability of the Secretary of State, because he ultimately is the person who has the authority, if he was so minded, to pass legislation at Westminster to impose direct rule, to bring some sort of political direction to the civil service. As things unfolded yesterday, James Brokenshire was issuing statements. He said, I'm in Northern Ireland, I'm in contact with the civil service, etc., etc. But the crucial difference there from there being a first and a deputy first minister was that really he had no power, no constitutional position in which he was able to give directions to the Northern Ireland civil service, because he has chosen not to implement direct rule. So really we have this democratic vacuum. There is nobody who can tell civil servants we want this to be done, nobody who can ask them what they're doing with any authority over them, and he has allowed that situation to drift on in the hope that the parties will obviously head back into the executive. Because that hasn't happened, I think it's becoming increasingly questionable as to whether that strategy can continue for much longer, because the ultimate potential for very serious situations developing, particularly in a crisis here, and he's been pretty fortunate over the last 6 months that we haven't really had any major crises of this nature, but really there is a significant difficulty there, and also a very unfair position for civil servants whose entire training, entire experience is all predicated on the idea that there's a minister, they advise the minister, and he takes what is a political decision. If there is any chance whatsoever that the delays which appear to have happened here, and particularly in the school decision, were down to indecision as to whether the civil service had the power to take those decisions in the absence of a minister, I think that's very, very damaging for the Secretary of State, because ultimately he has allowed that situation to develop.
And Sam, the Dolinger was in touch with the NIO yesterday, last night actually, to say, look, what was Brokenshire's role here? At the end of the day, this amber warning included a definition that there was potential risk to life. And when we asked the NIO last night, look, you know, what's going on here? What was Brokenshire's role? And more to the point, this civil contingency group, we asked the NIO, why did it not meet until 2 o'clock yesterday? Here's the response from the NIO. To be clear, they say, the Executive Office provides the Secretariat for the Civil Contingency Group. The response and recovery to an incident, such as ex aphelia, are devolved multi-agency responsibilities. In other words, the NIO instantly to the Nolan Show, pushing this on to the devolved administration, pushing it and saying it's their responsibility, not ours. The NIO continued in their statement, the Secretary of State has remained in regular contact with the civil service during the course of today and will do so over the coming hours. So this feeds into your theme, Sam, that what Brokenshire's doing here is he's saying, that's for the devolved administration.
Well, he's passing it on to a devolved administration which is non-existent. I think that's the key and the fundamental difficulty here. I mean, largely it doesn't really matter what he's doing. The one very significant role which he would have had, and it would seem that this may not be necessary because the consequence of the storm has been less severe in Northern Ireland than it has been in the Republic, but the one significant area for him, which would always be there, is in liaising with the military if there was a need for them to be brought in terms of clearing up after this, and that was something which he did allude to yesterday. But in terms of the emergency services, in terms of all of the devolved administration, there is no position whatsoever in which he can give them direction. And really, I think that is something which is very difficult for him to defend, given that at the stroke of a pen, really, or a late-night division in the House of Commons, he could instantly bring what would be an imperfect government, but it would be some government to Northern Ireland until the local parties decide whether they want to go back in or not.
The TV leader, Jim Allister, with us this morning. Morning to you, Jim.
Good morning.
This gets more interesting. Here's what we can actually reveal right now. The National Emergency Coordination Group in the Republic, right? They met on Saturday, but they had a high-level emergency management severe weather team meeting from last Thursday. Now, yes, the warning was different. It was a red warning down there. It was an amber warning here, but an amber warning is still a potential risk to life. What on earth happened around the planning of this, Jim, in Northern Ireland?
I do have to say, Stephen, I think you are overhyping this. You know, until lunchtime on Sunday, we were on a yellow warning, and then it suddenly comes amber. It never gets to red, so I don't think you can draw parallels with the Republic. And then the organisation exists, namely the contingency group, meet. I don't think...
No, they don't meet. They don't meet until 2 o'clock yesterday.
Yeah, well, 2 hours later, I don't think in the scale of things that's huge, because the storm wasn't expected for another 24 hours. But, you know...
We were in the teeth of the storm by 2 o'clock yesterday.
Yes.
And that contingency group is supposed to provide reassurance that all necessary preparations are in place.
They met 2 o'clock on Sunday.
No.
They met at
2 o'clock on Monday, Jim.
I understood you to tell us they met 2 o'clock on Sunday.
No, this is my point.
I see.
They met at 2 o'clock on Monday after businesses had closed, after banks had closed. The schools were all closed by then. This is my point, Jim. They met at 2 p.m. on Monday.
Well, that does seem rather tardy. But let's be clear, even with devolution, there wouldn't have been a politician at that meeting. That group operates its civil servants, its heads of emergency services, it's all of that. And let's be perfectly frank, no politician, no civil servant can turn the forces of nature. Yes, they can prepare and should prepare for the worst. And I'm very grateful this morning that the storm has passed without loss of life in Northern Ireland. I very much regret the loss of life elsewhere, without huge impact on our daily lives. And I think we need to give appreciation to the NIE workers who are out in the most horrendous conditions, restoring power, to other emergency services that were in standby. I think we need to keep a perspective on this. And I think the overall, and thankfully it was aided by the fact that the storm maybe wasn't as bad as it could have been, that generally Northern Ireland has emerged relatively unscathed out of all of this. And we should be thankful for that.
Sam McBride, so Jim Allister essentially saying, look, you know, you're wishing for politicians here. They wouldn't have made much of a difference.
Well, I think there is an element of truth in that. And what we're talking about here is around the margins. But marginal decisions can be very important in a crisis like this. I think that the nature of what has happened yesterday has been less than some people feared. But the principle here that not having a politician, any politician, even a bad politician, who can just take a decision is a key flaw in the system. The decision to close schools, for instance, is an inherently political decision. Did civil servants just bat this about between them for a long period, unable to decide whether they could do it? We don't know that because there's nobody there who's accountable. There's nobody who can come on and be interviewed about that. I think there's a fundamental problem that for the first time since 1921, since the state was created, there is nobody who is accountable for what is going on in our name as the public in terms of what public servants are doing to any legislature. It would be very imperfect for somebody who's not elected in Northern Ireland to be accountable to Parliament, but at least our MPs at Westminster would be able to ask
well,
them questions.
Well, Sam,
that's
surely,
something we can't do right now.
Surely the head of the civil service, David Stirling, is accountable insofar as he's being paid with public money from the public purse. He's in charge at the moment. He's accountable, surely, Sam.
He is ultimately accountable in the sense that, yes, he is paid by public funds, and I think he felt an onus on himself yesterday to come out, to make a public statement, to front up, to be the face of what passes for government now in Northern Ireland. But that was a choice of his. I mean, there was no compulsion on him in legislation to do that. There is no compulsion on him. And actually, it's generally frowned upon for senior civil servants to do media interviews. I think they are being left in deeply uncertain territory and actually a very unfair situation to them, where they're being asked to act like politicians, but they're not politicians, and this is not what they are trained to do. This is not their experience, but they're being left in that situation.
Could I say, Stephen, that I agree with them that there's a link missing in the chain of accountability, because we neither have government from Stormont nor really from Westminster, and Westminster should be filling that void with a form of direct rule, because obviously this Stormont isn't going to work. But, you know, having had a First Minister or Deputy First Minister muscling into a photograph with the head of the civil service wouldn't have made one whit of difference as to the storm or to its handling. It was down to our emergency services, NIE and others, to handle what was thrown at them. And I think, generally, they handled it well. And if there's been a failure of local ministers, it was highlighted by Mr. McQuillan when he said that various contingencies haven't been upgraded for 10 or more years. Well, who's been in charge for those 10 years? The very devolved ministers that we're lamenting. Some are lamenting the absence of today.
Well,
so, you know, were they asleep at the wheel? I don't think we can blame Westminster for that, or civil servants for that.
Doug Beattie from the Ulster Unionist Party, you think that local politicians being in charge would have made a difference. Tell us why.
Yes, I do. And I've got to start, Stephen, if I might, please, just to thank our first responders, emergency services, NIE, the likes of the PSNI, for the work they did yesterday. It was truly inspirational. I saw it firsthand. And if you drove down the M1 between Lisburn and Portadown, you'd know exactly what I mean. But I do think there is a place for our ministers. What we lacked was strategic decision-making. And I know for a fact that if you were a minister of infrastructure, for say, on a Friday, as this thing was building up, you would start to ask questions, as would the Minister for Education, as would the Minister for Health. And I would be in no doubt whatsoever, because these people are accountable to their electorate, that they would have had this contingency group meeting on the Saturday in preparation for what was going to happen on the Monday. And I believe that without a shadow of a doubt, because they're accountable. Because what we actually had was schools being told that they would be closed at 10:30 at night, and families weren't informed. So for me, this is absolutely a failing at a political level. And there's no point dancing around it. I will not criticise the head of the civil service. I will not criticise the civil service at all. They're the ones who made the decisions. They're the ones who did the work. The strategic decision-making should have come from politicians, and it didn't. And that is shameful.
Jim?
Well, I don't disagree with much of that. I think the first priority is...
Well, you do. Doug's saying local politicians and local accountability would have made a difference. You're saying it wouldn't.
Because this contingency group doesn't consist of politicians. It consists of emergency service people and the head of the civil service. He chairs it. Whether there's a first minister or any other minister, it's the head of the civil service that chairs it and calls it. So I don't think it would have made a difference. Yes, I think there was tardiness in the school decision. I think it could have been made sooner. And I think in reaction to that, they overreacted about today. There really is no justification for our schools being closed today. It could have proceeded on the basis all schools will be open unless you hear and are told that your school has no power or has been damaged. But the idea of schools closed today, I think, was an overreaction.
Well, surely they can't win. They were blamed for not making the decision early enough. And now you're saying, in terms of today, they made it too early. Stephen Antrim, you're on this point. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
By the way, apparently we're having technical problems with our phones this morning. If you're trying to get through to us, 030-30-80-55-55. Be patient with us. Go ahead, Stephen.
I think I was on yesterday talking to you about the schools issue. What Jim Allister has just said amplifies the fact that they've made two bad decisions. They made a decision on Sunday night to try and communicate at 10:30 when children are asleep and most of their parents are asleep. And then yesterday, they overreacted. The statements go out in the name of an executive office. But, you see, we don't have any accountable executive decision-making. The decisions are being made by civil servants. And Doug Beattie argued that ministers would have made a difference. I think if you were to ask the previous Minister for Education, Peter Weir, to come on and ask the question, would he have closed schools today? I think there's a nonsense going on here in terms of trying to get the devolution show back on the road when it's clear that there will be no resolution. And James Brokenshire is clearly under instruction not to do anything about implementing direct rule. So we're left in the vacuum. We're on our own, Stephen. That's the problem, that common sense has been parked somewhere in terms of how the civil servants are operating, and we have no accountability. I would like to hear who it was that made the decision to close the schools and to hear their explanation for doing that.
Sam McBride, final word to you on this.
I think that Doug Beattie is right about one point there, that if you had a local minister, they would be acutely aware of the electoral impact of this. They know that their jobs, their livelihoods depend on the public putting them back in to their positions. And they would have been asking questions. They would have been getting concerned as they saw situations developing elsewhere. And I think that is a key factor which is now missing from the equation. Civil servants don't have that pressure. They are employees, effectively, in a way that politicians are not. And really, now there is as Jim Allister, I think, used the phrase, a key link missing in the chain of governance in Northern Ireland.
Sam, I can tell you yesterday, and I won't mention the agency that was involved, but this was a major agency in Northern Ireland. And I can tell you that yesterday this agency was expressing deep frustration that they couldn't get a decision out of Stormont, that they couldn't actually identify someone who was in charge. And what they were looking for was leadership. They were looking for someone to make a call on a pretty major decision, and they couldn't get it. Now, if that's in the middle of yesterday, where there was an amber warning, what if it had been a red warning? What about if it had been a major disaster incident in Northern Ireland, for which these people train and decision making is important? What if it had been a lot worse than yesterday turned out to be? We have a major institution, and I don't want to name it with respect to the confidentiality around it, but they could not get even identify who was in charge yesterday.
Well, I think that's not surprising because of the nature of what is now left at Stormont. And I mean, don't forget that the head of the civil service, who nominally and ultimately, I suppose, is in charge of what is there at the moment, he was in a situation where he was not only dealing with the immediate crisis, chairing the contingency group, etc., but he was receiving calls from James Brokenshire, who has no control over him, but was clearly wanting to be involved at some level. He was getting calls from Michelle O'Neill, from Arlene Foster, from all the various parties. These people had no control over him, but was he taking on board what they were saying because they have a democratic mandate? I mean, I think it's very easy to see how that could be a very confusing situation, trying to weigh who on earth ought to be listened to, who ought to be disregarded, and who ultimately takes the call.
Yes, that's because, if I may say, Sam, we have no leadership and we have no accountability. And that is something that needs to be fixed as urgently as making plans, contingency plans, for events like Ophelia. You know, you can't expect the public to live in a vacuum. And they're growing very, very tired of it. And I don't think I need to reinforce that point.
This civil contingency group, by the way, it met at 8 a.m. This morning. If I just read some of the rest of their statement here, they say the civil contingency group was convened at the request of the head of the civil service to give maximum possible support to the multi-agency responders and support public safety. This is a group that met 2 hours after the amber warning kicked in. The statement says, it was agreed this group could be stood down this morning on the basis of updates provided by all organisations on activities overnight. In addition to the civil contingency group meetings, there were meetings of the strategic coordination group at 11, 3, 7 and 11 on Monday the 16th of October. A further meeting will be held today at 9:30. So that's happening now as part of the clean-up operation. But the point is this. The point that I would say to the executive office is this: in your own words, the whole purpose of the civil contingency group is to provide reassurance that all preparations were in place. How can there be public confidence in a group which doesn't meet until after people have gone home, until after businesses have closed, until after the amber warning was in place.
It's too little, too late, Stephen. Too little, too late.
And what if this had have been more?
Well, I think the public know that they can depend on the expertise and the goodwill of our first responders. And, you know, I think that this just amplifies what I've been talking about.
Okay,
politicians, no civil servants making decisions.
Well, the executive office and the head of the civil service, they say in their statement, were fully engaged and kept updated at all times. Okay, Sam McBride, thank you very much indeed. Thank you to Doug Beattie, to Jim Allison.